Hypertime to podcast.
Welcome everyone into the Hypertime. The Hypertime to podcast. I am your host, Josh Miller, and I am normally joined by my co-host, Alan Muir. But Alan is unable to record tonight. Typically what we do is we will record late at night on a Saturday, since that is the only time I typically have usually. But Alan is on the East Coast, and I am on, I'm smack dab in the middle of the United States. So we are on two different time zones. And it's very hard to get together to record. So Alan is unsure when they will be able to record next. So I wanted to give this a try because this might be the way I have to do it for the near future. I am actually recording this on September 3rd. This episode isn't supposed to hit until much later. I'm hoping to possibly get Alan back before the earlier episodes drop, but we will see. We'll see how it goes. But I figured I would pick a topic that maybe they would not be as interested in, because I'm not really sure where Alan falls on this topic in particular. But I have a fond love for this character. And the character, if you are not paying attention to the episode titles, is Popeye. I am a big, big, big fan of Popeye. When I was a little kid, Popeye was one of those cartoons that I would love to watch. It wasn't on typically on normal channels, but my grandparents had a VHS tape that had a few Popeye cartoons. And the Popeye episodes that I remember the most are the longer episode ones. We will actually mention those in the podcast today. But it was the 40 Thieves and the one with the genie. I can't even remember the titles offhand right now, but I will get to those later. And so I have been a Popeye guy for as long as I can remember. And recently, my son has found Popeye as well, which is kind of cool. And he's watched all the episodes that he can possibly watch on Boomerang. And so because of that, I was like, you know what, let me go back and look into Popeye a bit. I know he didn't start out in cartoons. I knew he was a newspaper comic book, newspaper comic strip, whatever. And so I was like, he technically fits for what I want to do with this podcast. And so that is where we are today. We are here to discuss Popeye. We're not going to really talk about the movie with Robin Williams, rest in peace. We're not going to talk about the comics that are currently running, which they are, but I most specifically want to talk about just the character, where Popeye came from, kind of the background of the, his history, all of that kind of stuff. And I think what was very fun is that as I had this episode ready to go, there was a little bit of news that came out regarding a animated feature that had been in development. Depending on who you talk to, it's still in development, but don't really know if it is or not. But I will include a link for that in the podcast, along with a link on the website itself, vgu.tv. Check it out. And so, yeah. And so that is basically what we're going to talk about today, is just Popeye and kind of who he is, where he came from, his origins, all of that kind of stuff, and who he was based off of, and all that kind of thing, all those kind of things. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into our episode. So we're going to start with his origins, and that will begin with the creator. The popular Sailor Man would not exist without Elzie Chrysler Seagar. And he was born on December 8th, 1894. This man would go on to do comics in places such as the Chicago Herald and the Chicago Evening American. But his editor, William Curley, saw big things for Seagar and believed he would be best suited to take a trip out east to New York, where he would work for King Feature Syndicate to continue doing comic strip work. It was here that the paper's owner, William Randolph Hearst, would publish Seagar strips in the New York Journal and would give the most attention and fame. In his third published strip, he created Thimble Theater, and that began running on December 19th, 1919. The idea of the strip was to have a theater-style narrative featuring different characters and stories. This would include Popeye's future love interest, Olive Oil, but at this point, she was the girlfriend of a character named Harold Hamgravy, which is an amazing name. And so the comic would evolve over the decade as it was never hugely popular. The characters never changed, as they always revolved around Olive, Harold, and Olive's relatives. But on January 17th, 1929, Popeye would make his first appearance, albeit as a minor character. He would be the sailor man to get the other characters to an island, and then would ferry them back as well, although he was shot multiple times and only survived due to the good luck of another character. After that strip, he was gone. And so it's kind of weird to know that Popeye, who is, while he may not be super popular with kids nowadays, he has been very popular throughout, you know, the 1900s especially, and that he was just intended to be this one-off character who almost died in his very first comic strip is kind of hilarious. And so, yeah, he was gone. That is until fans made their voice heard. Popeye had become a favorite character, so Seagar would work Popeye back into the strip, which not only resulted in more papers picking up the strip, but Popeye would eventually become the main character as well. Olive would dump Harold Hamgravy and become Popeye's girlfriend, and Harold would no longer be a character in the strip. Years would pass, and more characters would be added to the strip, from Sweet Pea to Wimpy, Alice the Goon, and more. However, some of the things that would make Popeye the one we have come to know weren't prominent quite yet. Spinach was not used very often, and his antagonist Bluto had only appeared once. The story of Pappy's creation is actually kind of interesting. Seagar's boss, William Randall Hearst, could see the popularity, especially among children, so he wanted Seagar to tone Popeye back. And Popeye at this time, you know, he liked fighting. He would curse, which were, you know, kind of what you would expect in a comic strip. There were, you know, bubbles with different signs in it instead of actual words, stuff like that. So he was kind of more of a... Probably hearing my cat right now. Come on, kitty. Is that you, Eve? Yeah. So yeah, he wanted Seagar to tone Popeye back a bit because of all this stuff. And Seagar didn't really like that idea. He was thinking, who wants a wimpy sailor man? So instead, he created Pappy, who would be the foil for the children. Popeye would remain who he was, but Pappy would be more human aspect of the character Hearst had wanted. By the time Seagar died in 1938, Thimble Theater was in over 500 newspapers, and it was only in about 6 when Popeye first started appearing. And Popeye was selling over 600 items of licensed merchandise. The character would eventually be renamed Thimble Theater, starring Popeye. And by the time the 70s had rolled around, the comic would just be called Popeye. After Seagar passed away, Popeye would go through a number of creators. Seagar's only assistant, Bud Segendorf, who started working with Seagar at the age of 14, would be the longest running of them all. His daily strip run, starting in 1959, would continue under his both written and artist wing until 1986, almost 30 years. And then after that, he would do the Sunday strip until he passed away in 1994. It is imperative to give Segendorf his due. He tried to keep the strip as close to Seagar's original style while also incorporating characters from Seagar's time on the strip, while also creating new ones such as the Thung, which, God, I hope I put that in right, which also shared similarities to how Seagar would write characters. After Segendorf stopped doing the daily strip, Bobby London, who in a future episode we will discuss, as he was an Air Pirate member, would take over the creative duties in 1986. but would be fired in 1992 after including an allegory for abortion in the strip. Since then, Hy Eisman is the man behind the Sunday strips for Popeye, while the Daily Strip includes the reprints of Seggendorf's time with the character. Funny enough, I don't have this on my notes, but I think I remember seeing a story, like, probably within the last few months, where Bobby London, the one who was fired in 1992 for hinting at abortion in the strip, he actually is either now or had just started writing the Popeye, like, comic books, not the newspaper strips, but the actual comics, which is kind of weird, you know, 30 years later to be writing a character that you're fired from. So I'm curious how that played out. I can't remember if I actually noted some of the stuff in about his run later. And just full transparency, I've been working on this episode for about a year now. So a lot of this has kind of escaped my head. A lot of the stuff this season of Hypertime has kind of been that way. For example, I brought up how Bobby London was part of the Air Pirates, and the Air Pirates was something I started researching like 2 years ago. It's a beefy topic, and I think I might just have to get to the point where I'm like, this is the best I can do right now. I need to get this episode out. So when we get there, we will get there. But I think it's a very interesting topic that I think everyone would benefit to hear from, while also maybe researching it a little bit of their own if they feel it's something they would like to learn about, because it's an important thing that came about. But yeah, Bobby London is connected to that, and I thought that was kind of cool to have that come up in this episode, which I was not expecting. And so the cartoon itself, just 4 years after his first appearance, Popeye would become a cartoon created by Fleischer Studios in 1933. His first cartoon was actually in a crossover with Betty Boop in a now, depending on the country of course, banned cartoon due to Betty being mostly nude, in which she was hula dancing. In this cartoon, it would set the standard for Popeye cartoons. Bluto was the villain, Olive was the damsel in distress, Popeye was the hero. And these would commonly be shown in theaters ahead of movies. Popeye was huge almost overnight because of the cartoon, so much so that he actually surpassed Mickey Mouse in popularity at one point. William Costello was the first voice of Popeye. However, he became unbearable to work with after Popeye's popularity went to his head after just a few cartoons. So the Fleischers decided to find someone new. Voice actor Jack Mercer found the position due to imitating Popeye as he walked through the studio, as he was working there as an in-between. Lou Fleischer noticed this and thought he would be a perfect fit for the sailor. And so I'm going to try something different here that I haven't done in other episodes. And I'm going to try to interstitch some extra audio here. So if I'm doing this right, right here you'll hear some talk from Jack Mercer. Future Josh, put it in right here.
At the time, I said I didn't think that I could really do it well enough, so I went home and practiced. And about a week or so later, my voice cracked. And I got this peculiar sound, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, something happened here. But it was the actual tone that I wanted to get.
To add one more wrinkle to the character, Mercer not only ad-libbed the famous Popeye dialogue where he mutters under his breath, but just gave him more personality in general. He was funny, charming, sad, happy, and just in general more emotions than Popeye hadn't really showcased until Mercer came in. So much of these things were Mercer's personal touch to the character. And in particular, that like muttering under his breath is something I absolutely adore. I find it so hilarious that he's kind of throwing little cheap shots here and there, but the characters don't understand him because kind of under his breath, he's like, oh, just take him off a little big fat face. I love it. I love it. I like how he'll talk to him like this, and he'll go, oh, he'll stick a little bit. Oh, it's so good. Olive Oil would be voiced by Mae Questel, a woman who was also popular for doing the voice of Betty Boop at the time. Questel would base Olive off of actress Zazu Pitts, who would often have a fluttery and flustered delivery with her performances. That wouldn't be the only role Questel would do in the cartoon, though. She even took a stab at voicing Popeye as well a few times. When Jack Mercer, again Popeye, was serving in World War II, they had scripts ready for him to record when he could. However, in times he couldn't, they would have a stand-in for him. Unfortunately, the stand-in would have Mike Fright, resulting in Questel doing her best Popeye impression and having the engineers tweak it the best they could to make it work for the cartoons. And so here's another little audio clip from Miss Questel herself, and where she can kind of explain it herself while sounding exactly like you would expect her to. So hear that right now.
Where do you hear where she got the olive oil voice?
Oh, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being a mimic, Zazu Pitts, do you remember
sure.
that?
Sure,
of course.
Sure.
Well, anyhow, I saw a storyboard of olive oil for the first time and I nearly fainted. You know, look at this face and the legs and the whole bit. And I said, I wonder who. And Max Fleischer at the time said to me, May, what kind of voice do you think you ought to do? Because I used to do dogs. Cats, you name it. I said, I have a voice. And I said, oh, dear. I don't know what to do, what to say.
Well, that was The man who did Popeye was called into the service, and
you
did Popeye? How did you
And we
that?
Had a Popeye all set up right at the recording studio. Now, this man had been on the stage, and he had all the know-how. He had the voice. He got mic fright, which is a terrible thing. Here we are at RCA Studios trying, you know, to get through with a cartoon. So I stepped in, and of course the engineer did a little engineering, but I sounded like, whoa, blow me down. Look, what a girl. Whoa, shiver me timbers, blow me down if you ain't the prettiest gal in town. Look.
Bluto, on the other hand, would go through a number of voice actors. However, the main two often associated with Bluto are Gus Wicke and Jackson Beck. Gus Wicke was the main guy in the 30s prior to the studio moving to Miami. When this happened, Wicke didn't move with them. So during this time, Bluto was rarely used, if ever used. When the studio moved back, that's when they brought aboard Jackson Beck, the narrator on the Adventures of Superman radio show. Jackson would continue to voice the character for decades, including the character of Brutus, which we'll get to here in a little bit. Funny enough, both Jack Mercer and Mae Questel also found themselves voicing Bluto at some points. And sound was, in general, a very important aspect of the cartoon. Outside of the actors bringing the characters to life, the Fleischers wanted the music to stand out. Utilizing an old sea shanty sort of theme, they tried to get someone they often utilized in Sammy Timberg, who was known for Betty Boop and the Superman theme. However, when they contacted him to do the Popeye theme, he was out on a date. So instead, Sammy Lerner would be the one to create the Popeye the Sailor Man theme. This would help Popeye stand out even more, because at this point in time, companies like Disney and MGM Studios were not fond of having themes for specific characters. Yet, all these years later, anyone can identify Popeye based on the theme song alone.
I want a gazookas, which hates all palookas, what hates honey up and square up. Why fifth and I bottom and always up rustum, but none of them get nowhere.
During the time Popeye was being made, Disney's exclusivity with the three-color process and animation had expired. This meant that Fleischer Studios could expand their color, and with the use of the full spectrum, did something that would help set the stage for something new in animation. They would release two real cartoons based on Popeye. Two of the three were the ones I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Popeye the Sailor meets Sinbad the Sailor, 1936. In 1937, there was Popeye the Sailor meets Alibaba's 40 Thieves. And then 2 years later, in 1939, there was Popeye the Sailor meets Aladdin's Wonderful Lamp. These were longer form cartoons that showed cartoons could be commercially viable if expanded past the one reel, which was usually under 10 minutes. This would go on to become something much bigger in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs by Disney in 1937, but Popeye was, as far as I can tell, one of, if not the first cartoon to get its foot in the door there. One of the more interesting animation methods they used was the 3D effect used by a multiplane camera. This was a relatively new technology, created in 1933 by, if I mispronounce this, I apologize, Ube Iwerks. It's Ube Iwerks. It modified by Fleischer Studios to create the stereoptical camera in 1934. Basically, this was a tabletop that allowed for 3D miniature sets to be built where the transparent animation cells could go between these objects vertically instead of laying them down. This allowed for the different models to appear both in front or behind what was being animated. One example is if you watch Popeye the Sailor meets Sinbad the Sailor, there's a moment where he is walking through a cave and there are rocks that just kind of appear in front and behind him. It's actually a really cool look that I hadn't really seen many cartoons do, even after that. I want to say if you've watched the new Cuphead show on Netflix, I think they do some of that there too. There was an episode I saw with, I think it was the Candy Woman, the Candy Queen, whatever. And you'll notice that it almost looks like they're running in a circle because the background just kind of spins. I think that's what this ultimately does. It spins, but on the screen, it's so wide that you can't really tell. But that's kind of what it reminds me of. And on top, the use of sound and surrealism, something unprecedented in cartoons at the time, and it's easy to see why Popeye blew up. These cartoons would become so popular that Paramount Pictures would continue to make these cartoons. The transition to Famous Studios was done after a falling out with Paramount and the Fleischers. The latter would go, but many of the animators would stay and continue working on Popeye. And when I say the latter, I mean the Fleischers themselves, but the people, other people working on it would stay. The studio would be renamed to Famous Studios, and the Popeye cartoons would start to see the quality dip and strip away some of what made Popeye so beloved. Animation in general would hit a rut in the 50s, and the same affected Famous Studios. So by August of 1957, Famous Studios went into debt and had to close their doors. Now for a twist. Because of the studio closure in 1957, all cartoon reels and negatives should have been destroyed in 1967, 10 years after the last produced cartoon. This was not in the contract between Fleischer and King Features, but television was already on the way when the contract was made, so Paramount had other ideas. Put these cartoons on TV. So they sold the rights to the Associated Artist Productions, AAP, which maybe that looks familiar in your mind if you've seen some of those old stuff. At this point, Popeye became huge yet again, just a year or two after Famous Studios went under in a way he hadn't since the 30s. New 5-minute cartoons would be created to put on television, and while it took the Fleischers and Famous Studios to make over 200 episodes in 25 years, King Features tried to make that many in just two. They would have the character sent out to multiple people, whether it Larry Haman, who was Bozo the Clown, or even ex-Disney animators. So the look of the cartoons would vary from cartoon to cartoon during these years, especially because the budgets were so low. Another interesting tidbit about the cartoon involves Bluto. In the comics written by Seagar, Bluto the Terrible only appeared once. However, Fleischer decided to use Bluto as a reoccurring antagonist for the cartoon. And Bud Segendorf would use him frequently in the comic books as well. So much so that it's impossible to think about Popeye without thinking about Bluto as well. However, after King Features took over the cartoon duties in the 60s to put him on TV, they ran into a problem. They had no idea that Bluto was technically a Seagar character. So they were under the assumption it was a Paramount Studios creation and didn't want to use the character in fear of receiving a copyright lawsuit. Instead, what they decided to do was create a different character who is pretty much the same. And this is where Brutus comes in. The characters were basically the same, just called something different. Even Jackson Beck, the person who voiced Bluto, would return to voice Brutus. It would later be explained that they were brothers. Once writers of the cartoon realized that it wasn't a problem to include Bluto. Popeye would later receive a 3D makeover in 2004 with a TV special for his 75th anniversary, titled Popeye's Voyage, The Quest for Pappy, written by Paul Reiser and Jim Hardison. It would feature Popeye having visions of Pappy being missing and heading out to find him for the Christmas holidays. This featured voices from Billy West as Popeye and Poop Deck Pappy, Tabitha St. Germain as Olive Oil and Sweepy, Gary Chalk as Bluto, Sanders Whiting as J. Wellington Wimpy, and Kathy Bates as Siren and the Sea Hag. And so now that we know everything that kind of came before, I wanted to take a moment about what inspired everything. Because while it was never outright said, by what I can find, there does seem to be belief that the characters were inspired by people living in Chester, Illinois, which was the hometown of Seagar. Is there that characters like Popeye and Olive Oil are said to be based on people that Seagar knew around town. For example, A woman by the name of Dora Pascal was said to own a store in Chester and also be a school teacher. According to locals of Chester, Dora was said to be unusually tall and thin and wore a bun at the nape of her neck. William, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Schuchert, S-C-H-U-C-H-E-R-T. William was the manager of the Chester Opera House that Seagar previously worked at, and he would go on to become J. Wellington Wimpy because of his love of hamburgers and being a bigger shaped man. But regarding the man behind today's topic, Popeye was said to be inspired by Frank Rocky Feigl. Again, I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Rocky was born on January 27th, 1868, and died on March 24th, 1947. Rocky was said to sport an angled jaw, be considered stronger than expected based on size and age. His speech was a little rough and would usually be seen with a corncob pipe around town, which is why he always spoke with one side of his face as well. Even though he was a bartender, which is how he ran into Seagar, he would talk about wanting to sail around the world, which would also lead credence to him being the character. An Illinois newspaper did an article on the man in 1979 and described him as this. Feigl, a bartender and general laborer around Chester, seldom had steady work and was often seen loafing around the town saloons. He lived with his mother until she died, then continued living in the house alone. Outside of this, Rocky was also known to enjoy fisticuffs from time to time, which is probably the biggest thing that led to him possibly being Popeye. In fact, Rocky had a deformed eye because of these very fights he loved to find himself in, though I've also seen that his eye was due to a birth defect. This may also be where the name Popeye came from. But there were plenty of stories about his fights and how strong he was. One story had him being brought into the woods by four men to be beaten and robbed, but he came out unscathed while the others needed medical attention. According to his nephew, Clyde Feige, there was also a story about Rocky that went as follows. They, a saloon, had two big guys inside who said you had to buy drinks for the house or put it on the gloves. They had a big bruiser waiting to fight, but he, Feige, put on the gloves and knocked their guy out. It wasn't just fighting in bars that made him a name around town, but he also loved children, so much so that he would give them change when they were needing it, or even protected them if they were being bullied by others. Again, Seagar never outright said that Rocky was the man behind Popeye. There are several stories about whether Rocky learned he was the inspiration of Popeye. Seagar may have been sending him royalty checks, or maybe that Rocky never found out at all. However, one thing is for certain, and that's people do believe that Rocky was what led to the creation of Popeye, so much so that his tombstone mentions him being the inspiration of Popeye and features the first drawn headshot of Popeye that Seagar had illustrated. And that will also be included on the website, so check that out.
If anyone doesn't arrest me, it's possible that I'm understand.
So I'll finish this off here with some random trivia. It's really hard to get a longer episode when you're just kind of riffing by yourself. So hopefully that's something you all enjoy, because you might get some more like this. But yeah, random trivia. Seagar would sign some of his early comics using a cigar, since his last name was a homophone of cigar. Comic legend Jack Kirby has ties to Popeye as well. He was hired on at Fleischer Studios to help clean up animation by adding the in-between images to make movement and everything more fluid. He apparently didn't like it. However, after he left, he would go on to create a Popeye knockoff for a newspaper strip called Socko the Sea Dog. And for another name I'm about to mispronounce, Genndy Tartakovsky. He did stuff like Dexter's Laboratory, Hotel Transylvania, Samurai Jack, and much more. He had one of the Fleischer animators as a teacher. He had a love of Popeye and was planning on making a Popeye movie for Sony. That fell through in 2014 when he was told by SPE executive, Sony Pictures Entertainment executive Amy Pascal, that they just don't like Popeye. But in 2020, it sounded like it could be in the works again, though it's been silent since. Test footage for the movie can be found at a link that I will include in the show notes. But Tartakovsky said this about Popeye. Not only were those characters really well animated, they were animated really funny, which is an even harder thing to do, to elicit laughs just from movement. But that's why I'm in this industry. It's what I love. Popeye had that in spades. The way those characters moved was really funny. I was so looking forward to it. That little test we did was just a scratch of what we had planned. But to kind of follow up on that, as I said, I'm recording this on September 3rd. On July 26th of this year, 2022, someone uploaded an 87-minute animatic of the film, where it's basically just a storyboard that would very vaguely animate in a way that would be similar to the final product. And Sony promptly shut that down on YouTube. But then it was pretty much immediately uploaded right back up to archive.org. And I will post that link on archive to the show notes as well. So check that out. I watched the whole thing. There is actually a short of like the full animation of one of the scenes in that movie. It's of Popeye and Olive Oil on a boat, and some pirates come by and try and take her. Or I don't think they were trying to take her. I think they were trying to take something else. But it's like a full-fledged animated thing, like final product looking type of animation. And that's in this animatic. Like, that rough draft essentially is in it. But it's a complete story. I wouldn't say it's like the most amazing thing ever, but it definitely gives me like Hotel Transylvania vibes, for instance. So I think it could have been a pretty cool movie that kids would have enjoyed, so I'm kind of surprised it was scrapped, or maybe scrapped. We don't really fully know there, but if it were to come out, I would watch it in theaters. I actually liked the animation that I had seen in that little short, and having that as a full-fledged thing based on the animatic that had been leaked, I think it would have been pretty cool. Animator Stephen Stephen DiStefano also posted some production artwork of the film on his Tumblr. I did grab a few of those and I put it on VGU. I will put them on VGU.tv. I will also include a link to his Tumblr in the show notes as well. So check that stuff out. It's really cool. You'll see different images based on that animation, like Baby Bluto and Baby Popeye and all that kind of stuff. It's really cool. And so if you follow Hypertime over on the VGU channel, you may be aware that Shigeru Miyamoto, the famous creator of Mario, originally wanted to make a Popeye game. Due to Nintendo not being able to secure the rights for the character, though, he had to instead go about and create new characters to match the very same theme of man rescuing a woman from a big brute. Thus, Donkey Kong was born. Which still seems crazy that Donkey Kong came about because they couldn't get Popeye. But maybe that was a good thing, because a lot of people like Donkey Kong. My son is obsessed with Donkey Kong right now, so Popeye would also be a reflection of the time. During the Great Depression, for instance, he would live a poor man's life, finding residence in ramshackle buildings. When the U.S. entered World War II, he suddenly found himself on the sea again, something which was rare for the sailor, fighting in the actual war. This also included some incredibly insensitive caricatures as well. As anyone who knows like 30s and 40s cartoons, for whatever reason, they didn't shy away from that kind of stuff, and Popeye was no different. In April of 1937, Popeye was named the second favorite comic strip in Fortune magazine, only losing to Little Orphan Annie, which I said I wasn't going to bring like movie stuff in here, but if I remember right, Little Orphan Annie, that may have been, I haven't actually looked at, is Little Orphan Annie the one that the Annie movie is based off of? Because if it is, that's also the reason that we got that Popeye movie with Robin Williams, which maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more if we can do our special episode after this. But yeah, Annie came out and became super popular, and studios wanted something similar, and Popeye is apparently where they thought the next musical hit was going to be from, so. As I was doing this research, I also saw that some people believe Popeye was technically based on two people. Rocky was, of course, still one of those, but there's another being a Coast Guard that died during World War II. It is said that some later cartoonists may have used a photograph of this unknown sailor to help define the look of the character as well. Popeye was also originally going to appear in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, my favorite movie. However, Disney would have to pay licensing rights. Also, the MGM library that included Popeye was being bought by Turner Entertainment, and just it created too many legal problems. And so his cameo was dropped, which is kind of a bummer. Like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit has always been one of those catch-all cartoon things that I think so many, especially Disney, has been trying to capitalize on having like a big type of universe, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit felt kind of like the first. Seeing like Mickey and Bugs together, Daffy and Donald, like that kind of stuff was surreal, knowing that may never happen again. And Popeye could have been in there. He could have been one of the characters popping in there, but just wasn't. In the 50s, Ralph Stein was in charge of Popeye and Thimble Theater. During his tenure, he decided to mix things up. One of the biggest things was getting rid of olive oil, because Stein thought she wasn't interesting enough to be a romantic draw for Popeye or any of his antagonists. Stein replaced her with a number of other women, usually blondes. Stein had a type, from the looks of it. Olive would end up returning, though not as a romantic interest, but would also go through a physical transformation into a blonde. That's right, Olive Oil became a blonde for a little bit during this time. Other changes, Bluto was a leader of pirates. Popeye didn't eat spinach frequently because he became too strong. There were clothing changes and much more. I think I have grabbed some of those as well that you can find on the site. If not, I apologize, but yeah, just go check out Ralph Stein and Popeye and you'll see some of the changes. It's crazy. And yeah, just in general, I have a bunch of random trivia stuff here, so let's keep going. There's nothing noted about why Popeye would eat spinach, but I've seen it floated around that it may have been used as encouragement to make children eat more spinach. While it was mentioned a few times in the Seagar strips, it was the Fleischer cartoons that made it a thing. If this was a thing, it worked as sales grew 33% in the 30s as Popeye's popularity grew. Another possible reason I've seen is that supposedly spinach had higher iron. However, the scientist that printed this had typed it in error and was not discovered until much later. Seagar would also, because of this, receive a ton of spinach over the years from fans. Literal crates would just be mailed to his house. Due to U.S. copyright law, since it's treated as a work for hire, the strips can be in the public domain but still have trademarks with King Features, and they will not expire unless they are no longer used. King Features have not stopped, so while the strips may be public domain in many countries, there are certain limitations still, and I am not educated enough to know what those limitations are, but I'm assuming it's like Winnie the Pooh, where some of it can be used, but there are certain things about the characters that you cannot replicate in other areas. When Fleischer Studios moved to Miami in 1938, Mae Questall wasn't willing to move out there with them to continue voicing Olive Oil. To replace her, they hired on Margie Hines, who was the original Betty Boop voice actress, to start doing Olive Oil. Soon after, both her and Popeye voice actor Jack Mercer would get into a relationship where they would wed in 1939. By 1950, though, their marriage would hit the rocks and they would have a divorce. Details are not known, as they kept their relationship private, and Hines never remarried, but Mercer did within a few years. Jeep, the vehicle brand, is said to be named after Popeye's magical pet, Eugene the Jeep. Supposedly, American soldiers were impressed with the off-road vehicles shortly after their debut in 1941, and they thought that they could travel anywhere just like Eugene the Jeep could. And so that's where the name Jeep, allegedly at least, comes from. And the last thing I have here, there has been some confusion regarding Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, with people assuming the name came from the cartoon character Popeye. In reality, founder Al Copeland named the restaurant based on the 1971 film The French Connection and the Gene Hackman character named Popeye Doyle. However, in 1977, they would gain the rights to use Popeye the Sailor Man in advertising. This deal would cost Popeye's $1.1 million annually. This lasted for 35 years and ended in 2012. So if you are eating Popeye's chicken, just know that is not this Popeye. It is Popeye Doyle. And yeah, with that, I am done with the random trivia. I am done talking about Popeye, and we will get into the closing outro here.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish, because I eat the spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
All right, if you like what you hear, please spread the word of the podcast, rate, review, all that kind of stuff. But more importantly, please share it, whether it's Twitter, Reddit, forums, just word of mouth. Getting us out to more people is always appreciated. And thank you if you do that. Don't forget to follow Hypertime to Podcast on Twitter at HypertimePod. And if you have any questions or topic suggestions, feel free to reach out to us there or email us at Hypertime2Podcast@gmail.com. If you're Carlos, please stop spamming my email with whatever you're putting my email to. My inbox is flooded and I don't use that email for anything. But the name keeps coming up, Carlos. Why? We also have other content you can fill your eyes and ears with, especially if you're into video games. Check us out on VGU.tv and the VGU Twitter at VGU_TV. And if you need more video game podcasts in your life, we also have two in Players Club Podcast and Win, which is our weekend news podcast, to satisfy those needs there. We also have a YouTube. You can check us out at VGU TV. There are apparently several YouTube channels with that same name. We're thinking of changing that up a little bit to make it a little bit easier to find us. But if it's video game related and it's something that's relatively new, that should be us. So like, subscribe, all that kind of stuff there. We appreciate that as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter at jmilly99. If you're looking to follow Alan, you can follow them at The Alan Mirror. That's TheAlanMuir. I am not going to do their tweet of the bye week. I'm not going to do my tweet of the bye week. Just follow us. We don't mind. We don't reach out and bite you over the internet. Just, we're friends. So, yeah, come follow us. We'll follow back. We're friendly. But yeah, that's it. That's all I have for the podcast. Hopefully this format wasn't too terrible. I'm definitely going to have to do some editing. I definitely stumbled quite a bit. It took me 4 goes to get this, to just get out the first, 5 sentences out of my mouth. But yeah, hopefully Alan will come back. Again, it's really hard to do a one-man podcast like this. I'm not good at it. I'm pretty bad. But hopefully this one wasn't. Hopefully this wasn't too terrible. Hopefully you learned something. This is actually one of the podcasts I was most looking forward to. Because like I said, I love Popeye. And it's something different than the normal DC Marvel stuff that we typically focus on. And while there's still a lot of DC Marvel stuff coming up, I do have a few things that are not just strictly DC Marvel focused. We have a creator one I'm planning on recording. Again, that Air Pirates one I mentioned, I want to do that as well. There is stuff. And hopefully we get more recorded. Whether that's me, if Alan joins me. But I don't want to either let you all down or let myself down by not having more episodes recorded this year. So that's it. That's all I have. Thank you for listening. I hope you all take care. And with that, I will bid you all adieu. Take care. Bye.
This has been a VGU.TV production. For all of the hottest hot takes and other opinions on video games, music, and a lot more, tune in to VGU.TV.